Did you know he was there?
I couldn't see it, but...
Could you feel his presence?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Sit down. We have found that there's a kind of horse that always likes to run behind the early horse, and in order to qualify as being an early presser, he must be within a length. So look at the lines and find any horse that runs, you know, most of the time within a length. This is the horse that is always going to be behind the early horse. So the effect is he's going to get sucked along by the pace. If this horse is used to running 46s and he's in a race with a 47, he's still going to run behind the early horse, right? And he's going to be sucked along by the slower pace, which means he's going to have more left at the end. Conversely, say this horse likes to run 45s and he has to face a 44. He's going to try and stay up with the 44 and he's going to waste them. Wouldn't it be nice to know that in advance? Fair enough? The early slash presser is the other type of early horse. You'll recognize that horse because he's the guy with the ones in front, and he'll run wire to wire. But he also is the kind of horse that if he doesn't get the lead, will keep on running. And that's the dangerous one. That's the early horse that doesn't get the lead that comes on and wins at the end. Now, how do you recognize those? Pretty simple. Look for the ones in the first column and the second column. And he wins, goes wire to wire. But also note whether or not this horse gives it up. If this horse does not give it up, for lack of a better word, call him an early presser, early slash presser. The true early horse feels comfortable when he has the lead. When he doesn't get the lead by the second call, what does a true early horse do?
Quits.
Exactly. He will not be an exacter contender. He'll be at the back of the pack. You would not use a line that an early horse gave up on as being the kind of line that he would normally run. Now, the horse that would keep coming as an early presser when he doesn't get the lead might still be a contender. Fair enough? Now, picture a bunch of wild horses running across the plains of Oklahoma. These are wild. These are not race horses, they haven't been broken, they're not trained. Wild horses with normal behavioral characteristics. What do you see? You see a herd of horses?
No, wheat.
You see wheat?
A V.
Interesting. You've obviously seen real horses.
You got wild horses here.
You got wild horses right here in Las Vegas. Okay, what do you see? You don't see a line, do you? You always see them, some guys in the front, some guys in the middle, some guys at the back. Fair enough? That's your early presser and sustained. That's what Doc has been saying over and over. You've got to sort of nail these in and understand their patterns. Now, the presser. In a lot of the methodology, we've been hearing that a presser is the one that ups and presses the pace. I would like to sort of give another alternative to that. What I've been calling a presser is someone that goes along for the ride and takes whatever the pace is. In other words, yeah, he'll, if the race was coming this way, okay, you've got an early horse out front, you got the early presser there, the presser is in this pack, the sustained presser is back there, the sustained horse is way in the back. So in other words, he will not run within a length. He'll be in the pack. You'll always see him as being 2, 3, 4, 5 lengths at the second call, back. Never has the lead. It's never at the back, always in the middle. That's what we're going to call a presser. As opposed to a sustained presser, who is back there. And he's the one that sort of makes, you know, comes from 7th position up to 5, 4, and comes on to win. It's sometimes hard to tell the difference between a presser and a sustained presser. But there's no question about the sustained horse. The sustained horse is usually the guy that lasts of the pack, right? This horse has no regard for the pace. He doesn't care. He doesn't care if it's 21.44. He doesn't care if it's 23.47. All he does is run 6 furlongs and 1.10. That's all he does. He just runs 1.10. Now think about this for a minute. You got a sustained horse. The horse most affected by the pace is the early horse. The horse least affected by the pace is a sustained horse. These are the guys that run 110, 110, 110 and 1, 109 and 4, 110, 110 and 2, all the time. These are the guys that are all over the place because they either get the lead or don't, right? Therein lies a major secret. So what I'd ask you to do, are there any questions, basically, please feel free to ask, because I want you to understand it. It's the essence and the secret, I feel, to winning and understanding the races. Question? Maybe you could stand up and just yell it a little bit. Redefine a sustained horse. A sustained horse, as far as I'm concerned, is a horse that's generally towards the back of the pack by the second call and works his way up through the pack in terms of numbers. And now we all know the horse is decelerating less than the other horse, but in terms of finding him in the racing form, he's a guy that out of a 10-horse field, he's 9 or 10 by the second call. And then you see that amazing, he's 9 or 10 at the second call, and he works up to 5th and 6th and 3rd, and then finishes 1st at the end. It's that horse that sort of tends to make the big move from the back. He runs from the back all the time. You never see the horse in the lead. You never see him up close. Always at the back of the pack. Okay? Another question? The EP?
Sustained
pressure. I'm sorry, sustained pressure. Sustained pressure is a spongy horse. He usually is not at the back of the pack. The sustained horse is always at the back and comes up. The pressers are always in the middle of the pack. That's why, if you can see this, I've put the sustained horse behind the pressers. So when you're visualizing the race and figuring out how this thing is going to unfold, the early horse is on the lead. The early presser, if there is one, will be within a length. The pressers are usually in a pack, and the sustained pressers are in the back of the pack of the pressers. Sounds kind of goofy, but stay with me, and you'll see it. You'll see it very easily. And obviously, the sustained horse is at the back of all of them. He's the guy that, like, they all break, and then number one and seven, and number five at the back, and he's like 20 lengths behind. Yes?
What's
on the
second call?
Yes. Basically, the second call, because that's the most important call of the race, right? To try and get the lead by the first call. If he doesn't get it, most early horses will continue on and push and do whatever they can, and by the second call, that race is determined. He either gets the lead or he doesn't. If he doesn't have the lead by the second call, he's likely going to give it up. So we're using the second call as a basic criteria. Now, let's start the magic. This is your homework. This is the minimum standard that I'd like you to set for yourself. So you can mark this down as the minimum starting methodology standard. It can be your personal goal. Mark it any way you like, but this is what you have to do. And ask yourself whether you know how to find early horses. This is how you know. I'd ask you, as soon as you sit down and look at a racing form, look for an early horse. And start a log, a diary or a racing log, and start marking in your early horses. And what I mean by that is start keeping a record of your successes. In other words, you say race one, date so-and-so, early horse. And if you get it right, if the early horse that you picked is at the half, you're right. If the early horse that you picked is not at the half, you're wrong. It's that simple. And when you can pick the early horse at the half, 80% of 50 races, you know how to pick an early horse. Straight? In other words, find the early horse 80% of 50 races. In other words, 40 out of 50 races. Now, some of you can do this right away, obviously. Some of you, this may be a whole new idea. Now, this does a number of things for you. It starts you looking at the race in maybe a different way. You're starting to all of a sudden anticipate what's going to happen. And then you start to get your confidence level up. And then you start to, by the way, you're going to have to watch the race or at least go back and check it. So this does a number of things for you. It's forcing you into a pattern of recognition. And you're also going to feel pretty good when you start nailing the early horse. Because you all of a sudden now can find the early horse in any race 80% of the time. That's step one. Any questions?
Should he be first at the half? Is that what you mean?
The question was, should he be first at the half? And the answer is yes. You're looking, I want you to say, I think Bumblebottom is going to be the early horse, and he's going to be at the half before any other horse. If Bumblebum is at the half before all the other horses, you are right. Give yourself 1 out of 50. If you're wrong, put it down. And when you can do 40 out of 50, you know how to pick an early horse. Question?
Don't you mean second call?
Pardon me?
Don't you mean second call?
Didn't I say second call?
Yeah, second call.
At the half? What's the difference between the half and the second call?
What about
Rouse?
Round race.
What's the difference between the half and the second call in the road race?
Six call, 3/4, 6 furlongs.
Oh, okay. Canadian Derby. Yes, the second call. The second call. What I'm saying, in a sprint race, it's like you're doing a 6 furlong, it's the 45 portion. In a distance race, it's the 112 or the 110. Fair enough? You clear?
In the event that you have several early horses that are one at the second call, would you then go to time and try to...
No. The question is, if you have a series of early horses, what I'm going to do is ask you to decide which early horse is going to get the lead. There's a reason for it, because step two is going to nail that. I will allow you, if you have a tie at the... I mean, if there's two horses going for the lead and you have one of those horses, that's fair enough. I'll accept that. You give yourself the point. So what you're attempting to do over the next day, week, month, year, how long as it takes you, name the early horse at the half 80% of the time. Okay? When you've got that done, go to step two. Step two, project the pace for the first two calls. Write it down. Step two, project the pace for the first two calls. And we'll go over it. And let me ask you a quick question. The first thing you do is sit down in the racing form. You mark in the running styles. Now, at this stage, you weren't too sure what to do. You don't know whether you're doing it right. But all of a sudden, after you've done this 50 times, right, you found that, hey, I can get the early horse at the half 80% of the time. And you start to feel comfortable. So now, your next stage is to put times to them. Now, where are you going to look? What horses are going to be setting the pace? Won't be this guy. Won't be these guys. Won't be this. You only have your E-type horses to look at. So the technique is to look in your racing form and look at the horses that you have marked with an E of some type, either the early presser, or the early slash presser, and consider only those horses. And what you're basically going to do is look down the first calls of all of those horses, all of their times, and try and guess what the best first fraction is going to be. Now, does that sound spooky? Simple. If you haven't been doing it up till now, try it. You love it. You're going to establish the first call. So predict the first fraction. 22, let's say. Take a 6-furlong race. So find out who's got the best first fraction and figure out who's going to do it. Tell others to it. Do the same thing for the second call. Who's got the best second call? You've also, now you've established who's going to be on the lead, and you're going to establish what the time's going to be. Okay? You do exactly the same thing for root races. Is it root or route?
Route.
Route. Right. Gotcha. Okay. Distance races in Canada, right? Okay. Exactly the same thing. You take your first call, which is like your 45, or if it's woodbine, it's 47. You know. But your 45, 110. Take the first two calls. Do it exactly the same way. Who's going to have the lead by the first call? It's a 45. Who's going to have the lead by the second call? 110. Who's the fastest at the half? 110. That's your pace. He's marked out the first two calls. Do exactly the same thing. When you can predict, and here's your criteria, when you can predict the first call within 1/5 of the second, first call within 1/5, the second call within 2/5, same thing, 80% of 50 races, you know how to do it. First thing you do is sit down and you write down the running styles. Second thing you do, pick the early type horses, project the pace. Put down the first call, the second call. You've established the pace of the race. Now you're going to start, after 50 races, wishing that you could bet on the second call. Because you're going to get so good at it that you're going to amaze yourself. And this is going to lead you into pace line selection and contender selection. So when you can predict the first call within 1/5, the second call within 2/5, 80% of 50 races, 40 out of 50 races, you've got it. Fair enough. Then you go to the final stage. You take the first two calls that you projected, and your final goal is to project the final time within 3/5 of a second. And you do that exactly the way you projected the first call, exactly the way you did the second call. You look at the final times. And what you do is, let's say we've got a 6-furlong race, and you project at 22:45, and you know that 80% of the time you're right. So you know the race is going to run 22:45, right? Because you've done it so many times. Now you're getting good at it, right? You're getting confident. Look down, horse 8. I mean, you use these horses to establish the pace. Look down all of your horses and find a 22:45 or something close to it, and see what that horse runs in the final time. Let's say you got horse 8 and run it in 1:11. So mark the 1:11 up by this. Go to horse B. Look down all of his races. Make some judgments. When do you go back to find a 22:45? I mean, if you haven't been running 22:45s, you're running 47s and 46s or 43s, find the 45. Find out what time he runs. Okay? Take the horse with the fastest final time for your final time of the race. Good deal.
What?
Question coming up, and there's tape changing over, so I'll dance for a minute. Question?
I just answered my own question in my own mind.
Oh! He just answered his own question in his own mind. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Sure.
We were talking about the break, this very thing. How do you go about, I've seen races where it's say that 10 horses, and none of them in the 10 lines, I mean, it's like they absolutely will fight each other to not take the lead. How do you go about it?
The question is, when you have a race and none of the horses will take the lead, you have the most unique situation in the world. That's called a paceless race. That is the kind of race that got me to Hawaii. What you do, and we'll go through that, because when you find a race with no pace, two ways you can approach it. You can look at the horses that run the best times off the fastest pace. Or you can pass the race, or you can bet the 5 bottom horses, or wheel the whole race in a wind core, like I did. And let me explain it to you. When you have, and we've been talking about what happens when you have a pace. Let me see if I can explain this to you. And this all leads into what race to play, what race is not to play. So it's a good question. If you can establish the pace of the race, you'll notice when you go down and you're doing X and O's or whatever procedure you're using. Horses just seem to fall into like a 45, 110. They feel comfortable and they can win and everything works. You'll notice that when they hit a 47, they don't perform well, or a 44 is too fast for them. Now, interestingly, if you have a race and there's no pace, any horse can win. It's that simple, because the stress and tension necessary for a presser to win, a sustained press to win a sustained horse, is not there. It doesn't exist. All of a sudden, you have this thing. It's not comfortable. I like to get out. Hey, here's a good example. You got a wife? You dance with her? When they get the music going, you find there's a rhythm that you feel comfortable with. Okay? If they crank it up too much, do you feel a little awkward? Or if it gets too slow, do you feel a little awkward? Horses are very much the same way. They run within a little parameter. As far as we're concerned, up in Canada, we find a paceless race. That's a Texas race. That's El Paso. We just leave it alone. We don't even waste our time with it. Because everything that we've ever done, we win the odd one, but generally, they're very inconsistent. And what you do, if you were looking to try and get your record straight, finding your early horse, that's one of the races you couldn't find an early horse. And it's the kind of race that if you tried to fudge it, you wouldn't get it right. And that would be one of the ones you wouldn't get right. So psychologically, you say, hey, every time I try to find an early horse and try to fudge it, and add lengths and beaten lengths, and there's a presser, and I'll figure, well, he'll take the lead. It doesn't happen that way. What happens is they all get out and they say, you take the lead. Okay. I feel uncomfortable. You take the lead. No, I'll go. No, I don't. And it happens. If you see a paceless race, they all come down the back stretch, and you'll see one pull out, one back, one back. The whole thing falls apart. Every computer program in the world that I've found cannot predict those. So that's what putting this whole thing together will teach you. You will not play those races because every time you try to set up the pace, it falls apart. So you will look at that and say, oh, nowhere to go. I can't find it. What am I going to do? Pass the race. Fair enough? Okay. One last thing on final time. You have established the first two calls, and now you're looking for any horse that can run a final time. Now, how do you do the final time? Just for those of you who don't understand it, let's say you have a horse that runs in a race 22:45, and he runs a 110, and he was beaten five lengths. Obviously, this horse runs a 111. Fair enough? So what you're doing is adding the beaten lengths and allowing 1/5 of a second. This is a rough guesstimate. It's not the most scientific thing in the world, but it's certainly going to give you contenders and baselines. Okay? Now, question? Get to you.
You're adding the beaten lengths to the first two calls also, aren't you?
No. The question was, are you adding the beaten lengths to the first two calls? The answer is no. You're looking at a baseline of 22:45, and you're looking at where the horse finished at the end of the race. So if he finished five lengths behind a final time of 110, his time is 111. So what we're basically saying, if this horse is put in a race against a 22:45, he's likely to run a 111. Now, it would be nice if you had three or four lines you could confirm that with, obviously.
Okay.
Question?
Is any horse in the race that has the best final time or only that horse that's leading in the half?
The question was, is it only the horse leading in the half or the horse with the best time? And the answer is the horse with the best time. Because you may have a horse that runs 22:45, 110, but you have a presser that runs a 109, and he runs it off a 44. So where are you good at that, right? That's sort of the thinking. Now, what you're looking for is to be able to set up the pace of the race. We can call it dream race. We can call it your projection. We can call it the Canadian Purple technique. It doesn't matter. All you want to do is have the pace of the race sitting up in front of you on your program so you can watch it and follow the race. Now, same thing. When you can predict the final time within 3/5 of a second, 80% of 50 races, 40 out of 50 races, you got it. Got it all written down? Now, I wouldn't suggest you start doing this tomorrow. I would suggest you start doing it tonight. I would suggest that you keep doing everything exactly the way you're doing it, not to disrupt any of your patterns, and I'd ask you to use this as something to add into. One of the reasons we did this and why we worked on it, I got Thoramation in the mail from Howard, and we held a Purple meeting up in Canada, and we did all of our work the night before.